A judge in Norway has determined that the attacker in Friday's massacre will be held for 8 weeks, four of them in complete isolation. Anders Breivik has confessed to carrying out the attacks that killed more than 70 people, first in downtown Oslo, where a bomb was planted, and then on nearby Utøya Island, where people, many of them youngsters, attending a camp run by the country's ruling Labour Party, were methodically gunned down. But while Breivik has confessed, during his first court appearance today, he didn't plead guilty. We know before the attacks he published a lengthy manifesto on the web, likening himself to a 13th century crusader, a Christian warrior against Islam. Today, a survivor of the attack on the camp run by the Liberal Labour Party responded to that thinking.
He might have been stronger than us at Utøya, but our ideas are better and our ideas will win through.
Today's court hearing was closed so as not to air Breivik's extremist views, but his statements have been released. For instance, he said he wanted to save Western Europe from cultural Marxism. We're going to talk more about Anders Breivik's views and the far right in Europe in a few minutes. But first, Stephen Evans of the BBC, he's right outside the courtroom in Oslo. Steve, Breivik also said today he didn't act alone.
He is saying he didn't act alone. He's saying that there are two other cells around him. Now, do we believe him? I'm not so sure, but they will certainly be investigating that. What may be happening, and I'm surmising now, is that he moved in a certain group of extreme right-wing people within Norway, certainly, but also perhaps within Britain. And he may regard those people as a cell. Now, whether they would be appalled or whether they would applaud his actions, we do not know. But just because you're in the same circle, political circle as somebody, doesn't mean that you are an accomplice to their crimes. So what the police will be doing is trying to find out who those people are and finding out how close they were to the actual criminal events. Now, on top of that, the British police have a representation here in Oslo. They've sent somebody over from Scotland Yard, and that's because on that manifesto on the web, he talks about his links to a group in Britain way back about 9 years ago.
And we're going to talk more about that in just a few minutes. But we also know that officials are visiting his father's home in France and also visiting the farm in Norway that Breivik rented. He was reported to have bought a lot of fertilizer, and that may have been used in bomb making. Polish security officials are also saying that he bought small amounts of components online for his bomb making from Poland. These are some of the things that we're hearing today. But meanwhile, if convicted, is it possible that we're hearing that in Norway he can't, for these alleged crimes, get more than 21 years? What is that?
You are hearing correctly. I know it's incredible to an American mind that somebody who commits that kind of atrocity can only get a maximum of 21 years. Now, apparently within the law there are provisions for particularly dangerous people to be locked up for longer, just like there are in lots of countries to do with, you know, mental health acts and whatever, dangerous people. But the law says that the maximum sentence for murder is 21 years. And even in ultra-liberal Norway, where the death penalty is by and large not contemplated, you do find people here who think, well, actually, that's a bit lean. And maybe, I mean, I heard one woman suggest outside the court that maybe it should be 21 years for every person he killed. That would be more like justice.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're hearing more about how he did the shooting, dressing up as a policeman as he traveled to that island, gathering everyone in the camp around him, allegedly to tell them about the bombing that had happened in Oslo, and then he opened fire and fired on people for 90 minutes, full 90 minutes before the police got there. What's the tone in Norway today? It's almost, you know, impossible to think it's anything but just horrible grief.
There's certainly that, no doubt about that. There is deep, deep grief, and it goes right across the country. It's a country, remember, of only 5 million people, and I would have thought it's the size of California. You know, it's a small population, a big country. And even, for example, the Crown Princess, the lady who is in line to be queen, she lost her brother in this thing. So everybody knows everybody. There is that. But having said that, life does go on in quite bizarre ways. I went into a restaurant last night, for example, and there were people in there ordering beer. And I, you know, what went through my mind was, you know, what are they doing out now then, you know? Don't they know what's happened? These people are out here. And then you get told that the three people in the corner lost their best friend in that massacre. And they're basically, and you look at them more closely, and they're all staring into their glasses or just staring into space, as it were. So you can't quite tell what's going on. Another bizarre, surreal event. People were waiting outside the court for the man to arrive before, hoping to go in before the judges ruled that that the thing would be private. And it being a court building, lots of things go on in there, like weddings. And out came a bride. You know, the business of the court is dealing with gruesome matters like this, but also dealing with weddings. And so the same people who were waiting to go in to look into the eyes of the killer started cheering the bride as she came out. So it's quite surreal. In my opinion, it's a nice country. It's a gentle country. People are very courteous. They assume the best of you. You know, they're very trusting. And this really has hit them.
The BBC's Steve Evans in Oslo, Norway. Steve, thanks.
You're welcome.
Anders Breivik said he wanted to save Norway and Europe from cultural Marxism. What exactly is that? And how does it fit into the big picture of far-right groups in Europe? And how much was Breivik influenced by writings of anti-Muslim bloggers here in the U.S., many of whom he quoted in his own online manifesto? Jonathan Birdwell is a researcher for the Violence and Extremism Program at the London-based think tank Demos. He writes that the far-right in Europe is resurgent, everything from legitimate political parties to thuggish soccer hooligan clubs, with a narrative not of racism, but, Jonathan Birdwell, of what?
Basically, what's happened is you've seen a shift from emphasizing race, also anti-Semitism among the far right in Europe, a shift towards emphasizing cultural conservative. And in particular, they take issue with Islam. And they say Islam is not a race, but rather it's a hateful political ideology.
And it's incapable of joining with these European cultures.
Exactly. These individuals and groups basically see European culture and individual country cultures, Danish culture, Norwegian culture, as being incompatible with what they see and describe as Islamic culture or Muslim culture.
Well, and Matthew Goodwin is also writing about this in The Guardian. He says that Breivik was dismissive of crude racial supremacist or neo-Nazi ideas. His was this new anti-Muslim narrative. But others seem to be taking the anti-Muslim narrative because they know the racial narrative doesn't play as well anymore.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you look at his manifesto, he states very clearly that for practical purposes, for pragmatic purposes, in order to ensure that they have legitimacy, they need to move away from race-based narratives and arguments and move towards this kind of cultural conservatism, which emphasizes and attacks Islam. And this allows the far right to actually take up the mantle, in their view, in the defense of Western Enlightenment values, so women's rights, issues that a lot of people, support. But this allows them to, in their view, gain more legitimacy.
Well, and staying with this phrase, cultural Marxism, even deeper than cultural conservatism, we read today on the Southern Poverty Law Center website that adherents believe that they're fighting a form of political correctness on steroids that was birthed by a group of Jewish intellectuals at Columbia University who'd fled Nazi Germany. And again, this is according to adherents of cultural Marxism, like the accused shooter in Norway, that this group of Jews sought to manipulate the culture into supporting homosexuality, sex education, egalitarianism. Now, you know, Anders Breivik has said that he wants to save Norway and Europe from this cultural Marxism. So it seems that it goes deeper than an anti-Muslim feeling.
It does. It does to the extent that they are also attacking what they see as part of the political establishment, which has allowed, which has been pro-immigration, pro-multicultural, left-wing, and which they see as basically the political force which has allowed immigration to basically what they see as taking over Europe.
Well, you've been tracking how far-right groups in Denmark, where you've also been studying the right, responded to the attacks in Norway. And there's quite a range. What are they saying?
Yes, it is quite a range. Some are not saying anything, actually. I think they're probably not sure, what to say, really, how to position themselves. Others are on the more kind of Nazi-associated websites are saying they support him, that it's about time that someone acted. But then other groups who want to kind of disassociate themselves from Nazi connotations want to emphasize themselves as nationalists, basically are saying that he's not a nationalist because a nationalist wouldn't attack his own people. They are also emphasizing what they see as his being pro-Jewish as a way to explain why he would be drawn to violence and why they, as nationalists, should be distinguished from him.
Because they're saying that he was a Freemason.
Exactly.
Well, when you stay with the idea that I'm reading of one nationalist that you write about, who says this is a terrible thing that Blavik did because, again, he killed his own people. Well, another took that logic a step further and wrote, it would have been better if it had been a mosque, but it's still something. So, in other words, they might disparage him for shooting fellow Norwegians, but maybe have had a different reaction if he had killed Muslims.
Absolutely. And I think, these are public-facing forums. These are open forums, so it would be even more interesting to see what's being said behind the scenes. And just from our interviews in Denmark, it seemed that there is a huge amount of animosity and violence directed towards the left wing, as Breivik would say, these cultural Marxists. So I would not be surprised whatsoever if among a lot of these far-right groups, they are actually not dismayed at all. By Breivik's tactics.
Well, as we heard, Scotland Yard has come to Oslo. They're very interested in his comments that while he rejected the British National Party, because, again, it's seen as being racist, he was very interested in the English Defense League. This is a group that it's actually a pseudo-paramilitary organization which uses the Internet and social networking to organize demonstrations and recruit. And so, as we said, Scotland Yard is there. He's also made these claims about a meeting years ago in London to try to resurrect a group called Knights Templar. What is that?
The Knights Templar is basically a medieval group that's associated with the Crusades and protecting Christianity in the context of the Crusades. A lot of conspiracy theorists have focused on the connections between the Knights Templar and Freemasons. A lot of conspiracy theorists focus on these groups. But it's quite an odd thing, actually, to hear that, and quite surprising, I think, from our perspective, to hear that he was interested in these groups. And there was this meeting in London, which is very interesting, so we're keen to see what some of the details emerge from the police investigation into that.
We're learning more about confessed right-wing Norwegian attacker Anders Breivik. He reportedly told investigators that he expects to spend life in prison for the Friday bomb and shooting attacks in and around Oslo, despite Norway's lenient laws. As we just heard, the maximum prison sentence in Norway is 21 years, but convicts can be held after their sentence is up if they're considered a danger to society. And in the wake of Friday's massacre, today we're learning about the resurgence of far-right extremism in Europe and its potential link to anti-Muslim rhetoric here in the U.S. By the way, here in the U.S., New York Congressman Peter King told the New York Times he intends to go ahead this Wednesday with his third hearing examining the radicalization of Muslim Americans without broadening the focus to include non-Muslim threats. Those hearings were controversial even before Friday's massacre. We're speaking with Jonathan Birdwell, a researcher for the Violence and Extremism Program at the London-based think tank Demos. Jonathan, we read in today's New York Times how Anders Breivik was influenced by a small group of American bloggers who call themselves counter-jihad activists. In his manifesto, Breivik mentioned American blogger Robert Spencer 64 times. Spencer's blog is called jihadwatch.org. Breivik also quoted Pamela Geller of Atlas Shrugged. She fomented the anger against the so-called Ground Zero Mosque, which, of course, wasn't a mosque and wasn't at Ground Zero. There's another American blog that makes a reference to a Muslim attack in the 1600s. This is the Gate of Vienna blog. You were just telling us Breivik was also inspired by history, as, that blog obviously is, and the Crusades. These American bloggers are saying they have nothing to do with Breivik's thinking. But what is the view from Europe?
Well, I think, you know, these individuals are in a very interesting position because obviously they are not solely responsible for a violent action like this whatsoever, but, you know, they are putting out there very inflammatory rhetoric that was obviously shared by an individual like Breivik. At the same time, these same individuals would criticize nonviolent, say, Salafi imams for inspiring al-Qaeda-inspired terrorism. So, you know, I think they need to recognize that they're at risk of hypocrisy if they don't apply the same logic to themselves.
Well, you and others have been saying, long been saying, that the sense that these were fringe elements, these right-wing groups, that weren't as deserving of attention as, let's say, radicalized Muslim groups has been false thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think it's obviously, from my perspective, very difficult to say, to compare the different threats. I think only people in the intelligence services are in a position to make an assessment comparing the different threats. But I think it's pretty clear that we become kind of, only solely focused on the threat from al-Qaeda-inspired Islamist terrorism. And, you know, there's been reported, the New York Times reported today that, you know, there were efforts to highlight the risk from far-right terrorism in the U.S.
This is the 2009 Department of Homeland Security report that suggested that the recession and the election of the first African-American president might increase a threat from white supremacists, but conservatives in Congress objected to that warning, and it was withdrawn.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think you saw some people trying to highlight the growth of this issue as a potential threat. But, you know, those in power didn't want to hear it. I think this attack in Norway obviously changes everything because of its scale and because of because it's so shocking. So I think we will begin to see intelligence agencies certainly in their public pronouncements, putting the threat from far-right terrorism on par or at least giving it greater priority.
Well, there is a spectrum, as you've said, from those who advocate violence all the way to certainly nonviolent but worrisome to you political parties. You say the far-right in Europe is getting dangerously close to the mainstream. Where do you see that?
That's being seen in a number of countries, from France to Denmark and Sweden to Italy to Austria. We are seeing, and obviously, of course, in the Netherlands with Geert Wilders' Freedom Party. So I think over the past 5 years in particular, we've seen these far-right political parties adopting the same approach in criticizing immigration from Muslim-majority countries. You're seeing a rise in these groups. Now, what is interesting in terms of what we saw in Denmark is that in Denmark, there's the Danish People's Party, which is, I think, polling at about 14% in favor. And yet, those on the fringes, you would think that perhaps these former political parties getting some power would provide a channel for those on the fringes to have a voice. But actually, what's happening is that these politicians, even on the far right, are viewed as sellouts. So they're not acting as representatives for those on the fringes.
Well,
so I don't think the growth of these formal political parties necessarily diminishes the threat from the more violent individuals on the fringes.
Well, Jonathan Birdwell, just one last thought. This would seem to be the real problem because, as we know, you have people in France, for instance, you mentioned France and a move to ban the burqa. You know, real concern that Muslim communities are not assimilating. Concern about people who have face coverings and you can't interact with them. And that's certainly not, you know, a racist thought or a violent thought. And it's a real thought. So you have politicians trying to address that while not inciting violence and hate.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think you're going to see, you've already seen it in the past couple of years, mainstream politicians trying to address these issues in a measured, conscious way, without kind of, fanning the fire of groups like English Defense League. Now, that's a huge challenge, but I think you are going to see increasingly these issues being debated more open in the public.
Jonathan Birdwell, a researcher for the Violence and Extremism Program at the London-based think tank Demos. Jonathan, thank you.